Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the program to listen to if you want to hear a different perspective. On health, we'll be talking about how climbing a tree can improve cognitive skills. I remember we used to do that, University of North Florida. How vitamin B12 deficiency in children is associated with grade repetition, and meaning being held back, and school absenteeism from Clinical Trials Week. Also, we're going to talk about how 5 days of eating fatty foods can alter how your body's muscle processes food, Virginia Tech University. And new causes for Alzheimer's, arginine deprivation from Duke University. And University of Otago in New Zealand, kiwi, it can make a big difference in boosting bowel health, and a lot more on health and healing. Plus, today I've decided not to have a guest so I can hit a lot of important issues that generally don't get much attention. For example, how Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking and thousands of internet researchers believe that we should not have killer robots. How 40 earthquakes hit frack-happy Oklahoma in just 7 days, the most on record there. How the Earth will only have 12 hours to prepare for a massive solar storm. How battered by drought, forests lose their ability to fend off climate change. And also how many of us were, most people I think, were concerned when these people go in and do these big game prize hunting. And what it generally means is you go into an animal preserve, some here in the United States, where you have completely peaceful animals, and you get in a truck and you buy your high-powered rifle, and you get close to them in a truck, and then you shoot them and kill them, cut off their head, and then take a smiling picture. There's a dentist, I believe he's in New Jersey, who killed a long-time older lion that was well-known in the whole area. It's the most famous lion in this area of Africa. And what? Why'd he do it? And then it turns out he's been killing a lot of animals, but Donald Trump's sons have been killing these animals. I consider these people cowards. I would, if I knew that my dentist had done anything like that, I would boycott them. So it's time that we said, you know, trophy hunting, no. No hunting. That's the way it should be. Anyhow, but what about all the animals that are killed in the United States by intent every year by our federal wildlife program? How many do you think were killed last year? Take a wild guess. 2.7 million animals killed by the rogue, totally corrupt federal wildlife program just last year. I'll get into that. Also, from our environmental segment, the water crisis, it's here, and it's here to stay. So you have two phenomena. You have massive flooding that's all over the world, and you have massive heat. Seems to be contradictory. No, you could have snow in New Zealand and snow in the middle now of July and the beginning of August in Oklahoma and some, or in Colorado and some other places. You've never seen that before. We'll talk about that. Also, take an honest look. Do we really want all of our DNA in a central database that is available for corporations and governmental agencies? And Obamacare, I warned you all, it was one giant scheme by the insurance industry, but the good corporate liberal Democrats sold it to their constituents. What a pack of lies. Well, today we can have a more honest look at it. Obamacare. Wall Street suddenly scrambles to buy doctors. Yeah, they're buying doctors. How much are they paying? The amount is staggering. What do they get for it? What do you get when you buy a doctor? I'll share that with you. Interesting and disturbing. Plus, we're going to have some audio clips that I'll play you as the program proceeds. Let's begin. Right now, Americans are having a meal, depending upon where you live in the country and the time, depending upon what meal of the day it is. More often than not, it's going to be a fatty food meal. Well, here's what Virginia Tech University discovered, that 5 days of eating fatty foods can alter how your body's muscle processes food. You might think that you can get away with eating fatty food for a few days without it making any significant changes to your body. Think again. After just 5 days of eating a high-fat diet, the way the body muscle mass produces nutrients changes, which could lead to long-term problems such as weight gain, obesity, and other health issues. So the study says, quote, most people think they can indulge in high-fat foods for a few days and get away with it. This is according to the professor of human nutrition, food, and exercise at Virginia Tech College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Quote, but all it takes is 5 days for your body's muscle to start to protest. In an article published recently in the journal Obesity, the scientist found that the manner in which muscle metabolizes nutrients is changed in just 5 days of high-fat feeding. This is the first study to prove that the change happens so quickly. Quote, this shows that our bodies can respond dramatically to changes in diet in a shorter time frame than we have previously thought. If you think about it, 5 days is a very short time. There are plenty of times when we all eat fatty foods for a few days, but be it the holidays, vacations, other celebrations. But this research shows those high-fat diets can change a person's normal metabolism in a very short time frame. And why? Here's how it works inside your blood. When you eat food, the levels of glucose at your blood sugar rise. The body's muscles use this as a way of clearing the glucose, and it can break down for energy. Muscles have to have energy. Glucose provides energy. Or it can be stored later, for later use. That's called glycogen. Now, since muscles make up about 30% of our body weight, and it is such an important site for glucose metabolism, if normal metabolism is altered, it can have dire consequences on the rest of the body, and that can lead to ill health. So, when you're on a high-fat, animal-based protein diet, you're loading up your body. You're overdoing your metabolism, and that causes this. So that is why we should not be on the high-protein, high-fat diets like the Atkins diet and other diets like that. Next up, from Nature Communications, University of Chicago Medical Center, they found that the bark of the magnolia tree, I love magnolia trees. In fact, I'm looking at one right now out the window. Beautiful. Trees, they give you that white flower. Well, that magnolia bark can protect the heart from hypertrophy. That's a thickening of the cardiac muscle that often causes high blood pressure that can lead to heart failure. And this was published in the journal. So one more thing that we can start to do is look at the extract, and I'm sure that it'll start being available. So just make a little note. And by the way, this has been used for a long time in herbal therapies. Magnolia bark extract. Something new for the heart. Also, we know that climbing is good for us. Well, climbing, going out into nature, going on a nature walk, you're going to climb. That's great. Here's what the University of North Florida said. Quote, climbing a tree and balancing on a beam can dramatically improve cognitive skills. This is according to the department down there. And the results of the study are published in Perceptual Motor Skills, suggesting working memory improvements can be made in just a couple of hours of these physical exercises. Quote, improving working memory can have a beneficial effect on so many areas of our life, and it's exciting to see that these activities can enhance it. So what does that mean? Here's what it means in just lay language. Let's say that you were just to put a beam on the ground, a simple beam, let's say a 6-inch wide beam, a plank, and you walk on it. Now, the key is you don't want to step off of it. You just want to walk across, like a person walks across a tightrope. Now, what would be the difference of walking across that beam on the ground and walking, let's say, at 5 feet in the air or 100 feet? It's the same beam. It's the same walk. There's just a difference in the consequence if you lose your balance. And so by keeping your focus upon the beam, it forces the brain to organize thoughts of balance, focus, and that helps the brain. And hence, it improves your cognitive skills. So think of the people in their 40s who are starting to have little bits of memory loss. In 50s, it's accelerating. In 60s, it's full-blown. 70s, they're in their Alzheimer's or dementia. Just doing a simple exercise like that. And that's also true of climbing. Now, it could be in any of these metropolitan centers where they have rock climbing where you can get on a harness so you're not going to fall and hurt yourself. But you're pulling yourself up and you're learning coordination, hand and foot skills, muscle, all of it's good. So climbing a tree that we did when we were kids, climbing mountains, climbing hills on a rolling terrain, always good for you. But if you really want to focus, walk back and forth on a beam and have a longer beam and a longer one. It's good for the brain. Also, something that's good for the brain is vitamin B12. Vitamin B12 is extremely important. In fact, I had the pleasure of meeting recently the Ortegas. You may mention, you may remember that it was, what was it, about 4 years ago, I had Jonathan Ortega and his parents on this radio program. They are now retired. They were career police officers in the Brooklyn area of the New York City Police Department. One would work in the daytime, one would work at night because their son, Jonathan, had advanced autism, and was not able to communicate, not able to function on his own. Went through a holistic protocol, and today he's completely normal. Had a chance to visit with him, and he is thriving and playing musical instruments and making gourmet vegan dishes and has a completely healthy diet. Well, one of the things that helped in that was not just rebuilding the intestine, the good bacteria, and the mitochondria, but also the importance of methylated folic acid at one milligram and B12 methylated at 1 milligram. And I've seen this in many people suffering from Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, the power of B12. But you have to get it up there and you have to get it in a form that's quickly and easily absorbable at a high percentage by the body. This is from Clinical Trials Week. Quote, vitamin B12 deficiency in children is associated with grade repetition and school absenteeism, independent of folate, iron, zinc, and vitamin A status. So what they found when they were working with and recruited 3,156 children, that those that did not have the B12 at adequate amounts, they're the ones more likely to be absent and not be able to do well in school. So it definitely impacts learning, and that's important. So make sure that if you have children, that your children are getting their B12, and that's especially important for vegans. And my suggestion is take a simple B12 lozenge or a tablet. Also important for people over the age of 40, you want to keep your muscle mass. You keep it by exercising through resistance exercise and good supplementation. Creatine is a good supplementation. This is from University in Canada, and it says, quote, according to this study, creatine supplementation in close proximity to resistance training may be an important strategy for increasing muscle mass and strength. So generally 1,000 to 3,000 or 4,000 milligrams of creatine monohydrate before exercising. And that will help you. You'll get muscle, you'll burn fat, you'll be stronger. So that's important. Now, prebiotics boost the health of people who are older, their immune system. This is the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. Quote, prebiotics can deliver immune system benefits to the healthy elderly better than placebo. And this was from a study that was published. This was a double-blind study. So let's get something like sauerkraut juice. That's a good probiotic, but also beet juice. That's another one. Or any of the lactobacillus or bifidus. Get it in your system. It can help you. And something else that can help you if you're going to be traveling, elderberry. Elderberry reduces cold severity in air travelers, Griffith University, Australia. The antioxidant-rich elderberry extract can reduce the severity of colds among air travelers, Australian researchers have found. Compared to the placebo, the group taking the elderberry supplements per day had shorter cold and less severe cold symptoms, suggesting that elderberry reduces the duration and severity of the cold. So, why not? This was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Integrative Medicine. Why not simply take elderberry on a daily basis? Because think of it for a moment. What's it doing? Well, when you're traveling a lot, you're in a contained environment. You have a lot of bacteria and viruses in there. You also don't have high-quality air in there. So your immune system is stressed. So what it's really doing, when your immune system is stressed, we're all exposed to a lot of different bacteria and viruses. That's part of the natural world. We're not going to live in a bubble, but we also don't want to be careless and irresponsible. So by keeping our immune system strong every day, we're able to come into contact with viruses and bacteria, and our body easily and quickly destroys them through what is called phagocytosis, and we remain healthy. So elderberry concentrate, just a teaspoon, is one way to keep your immune system strong. So it's not just about flying, colds, or flu. It's about immunity. Go to the foundation upon which what is staying. Also, something I found important that needs to be addressed. This is from Natural News. The VA hospitals kill more American soldiers than our enemies. Quote, the extent of the shameful neglect on the part of the Department of Veterans Affairs towards sick veterans seeking health care is only now becoming apparent. A leaked document has revealed that more than 238,000 veterans died while their applications for treatment were pending. That's nearly one-third of the more than 800,000 veterans with pending VA health care applications. The figures are taken from an April 15, 2015 report conducted by the VA Health Eligibility Center and the VA Office of Analytics entitled Analysis of Death Services. The document, which was leaked by whistleblower Scott Davis, a VA Health Eligibility Center program specialist. So, quote from Davis, the VA wants you to believe, by virtue of people being able to get health care elsewhere, that it's not a big deal, but VA is turning away tens of thousands of veterans eligible for health care. VA is making it cumbersome and then saying, see, they didn't want it anyway. At the very least, the VA has been shown to be sorely lacking in its record-keeping practices. Well, last year, the VA was at the center of a controversy involving the Phoenix Veterans Affairs healthcare system, which had kept secret a waiting list of veterans awaiting treatment. The Phoenix VA managers hatched an elaborate scheme to hide the fact that there were as many as 1,600 sick veterans who were unable to see a doctor for months on end. It is estimated that as many as 40 of those veterans died while waiting care from Phoenix VA healthcare system. And although this case is not unique, in fact, from one report, they say, quote, 34,000 combat veterans are among those listed on pending for health care, none of whom should be on that list since combat veterans are granted 5 years of guaranteed pay for VA health care. Let's put this into lay language. Every time I visit homeless vets, and I have spoken with well over 2,000, one of the things they face is they can't get in to get health care. If it's not directly related to combat, and there's no way they can frequently prove that it was combat, if it's something like skin lesions or paranoia or post-traumatic stress, then they have to wait and wait and wait. And a lot of these people are committing suicide, about 23 per day, every day of the year. In fact, more Americans have killed themselves, combat soldiers, than were killed in action in either Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, the solution is really simple. In fact, it's so simple, it's pathetic. We should simply have universal health care. That's it. Take all profit out of medicine. Isn't it time that we realize that the people who are profiting, the pharmaceutical industry, the insurance industry, they're the people who are causing so many of these deaths? If we made universal health care for every American, then every veteran, everyone, no matter what their income, would be able to get the treatment they deserve. Nobody would go broke in the process. That's what a civil society does. Oh, and how would we pay for that? Well, three ways. One, start a national campaign in every city in America for preventing disease. Put it in the school system as mandatory, and then have programming in prime time where people can see how to prevent cancer, heart disease, arthritis, inflammation, dementia. A lot of people wouldn't watch it. A lot of people would. For those who care about their health, then we could be preventing the diseases in the first place. And there are a lot of very conscientious people who would like that information because when they're exposed to it, they frequently use it. And then we could put a 1% tax on every transaction on Wall Street, including the quick transactions, and that would bring in about $1.5 trillion. So it becomes completely funded and doesn't adversely affect an American. Now, something that most Americans are not aware of is a department. If they do it, they only know it by name. And here is why you should be concerned about the wildlife services. According to the latest studies, these people at the rogue federal wildlife program killed 2.7 million animals. Yes, it's shocking to see a lion that's roamed the area that has hurt no one for decades to be killed by a trophy hunter who should be boycotted. But new data from the Center for Biological Diversity shows that this highly secretive arm of the U.S. Agricultural Department, known as Wildlife Service, it killed 2.7 million during 1 year. That's wolves, coyotes, bears, mountain lions, beavers, foxes, eagles, and other animals deemed what they consider pests to powerful agricultural livestock special interest groups. So despite increasing calls for reform after the program killed more than 4 million animals the year before, the latest kill report indicates that the reckless slaughter of wildlife continues. Last year, they killed 322 gray wolves, 61,702 coyotes, 580 black bears, 305 mountain lions, 796 bobcats, 454 river otters, 2,930 foxes, 3 bald eagles, 5 golden eagles, and 22,496 beavers. They also killed 15,698 black-tailed prairie dogs, and they get away with this. Quote, "It's sickening to see these staggering numbers and to know that so many of these animals were cut down by serial snipers, deadly poisons, and traps." That's according to Amy Atwood, senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity. Quote, "These acts of brutality are carried out every day, robbing our landscapes of bears, wolves, coyotes, and other animals that deserve far better. Wildlife Services does its dirty work far from public view and clearly has no interest and cleaning up its act. In fact, the agency insiders have repealed the agency kills way more animals than it ever reports. Just another worthless, corrupt agency of government, which are most of the agencies of government. We need a functioning agencies small enough to be managed, all with civilian oversight, with review groups that have an opportunity to see, are you doing your work on behalf of the American public? And any agency that represents a threat to our freedom should be abolished. And anyone who assumes that the agencies of government have the right to empower themselves over the rights of our Constitution, those people should be imprisoned. And by the way, this corrupt Wildlife Service Agency, it has killed more than 27 million animals in the recent past. So that's important. Now concerning Obamacare. I'm opposed to it because Obama had nothing to do with it. These are the technocrats. These are the smart people, men and women, careers, who know the average person's not going to be aware of what you're doing, won't particularly care what you're doing, until something happens that adversely affects what they're doing. Then they suddenly pay attention, say, what just happened, why did it happen, and how'd you let it happen? And then the answer is because you were not aware, and they knew that you wouldn't find this of interest. So they went ahead and got their lawyers to write the Obamacare. And by the way, these are the same lawyers and same companies that tried to do the old Clinton health care. We defeated that, but not this time. We were advocating for a universal coverage where there would be no exclusions, and showed how it could work. But also we included things like freedom of choice for alternative therapy, the promotion of the scientifically based alternative therapy. We have over a million studies, peer-reviewed studies, showing which ones work and how it works, far more than what they have studies showing what they offer works. So that's what we offered. Instead, working behind the scenes, working with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, working with the largest 12 insurance agencies, or not agencies, but they control our agency, the National Institutes of Health, private groups, they wrote every word of it. They then went about selling it. And you sell things in Washington by making promises, a quid pro quo. And then they tried to put a positive spin on it by getting all the people, the propagandists on MSNBC and other places to say how important this is. And they lied. Here's the latest. This is from Wolf Richter. Quote, for PE firms, the fracking boom was nirvana. By the way, PE stands for private equity. These are the most vile, absolutely heinous groups on the planet. They used to be called corporate raiders. Here's how they work, just so you understand how these people make their multi-billions. They will come into a town. They'll find a company that makes a good product and is profitable. And they will either offer the owners of that company, if it's a private company or if it's a publicly traded company, they'll offer the board of directors a premium. Let's say the stock is trading at $100. They'll offer $120. That entices the ownership to get a big buyout and the stockholders to get a big dividend. And if it's a private individual, they'll offer a large sum of money because it's not their money. They're using bridge capital or they're using borrowed money. And so let's say that you have a company that's been manufacturing, true story, by the way, true story from my hometown, been manufacturing, making bricks for a long time, more than 100 years, and you have several hundred employees, and that's their whole income. And generation after generation works that company. They have a pension fund, and they have no debt. Well, they're perfect then for buying. So either they get on the board of directors by getting a controlling interest by the number of shares they buy, or they make direct deals. Whichever way they do it, now they buy the company. And let's say the company is worth $50 million. The purchase is never $50 million because they get a finance company to come in and put up the bridge capital to make the purchase, and then they have a whole mass of machine that goes to work pumping and dumping, get the stock value up, and then at the high end, you sell it, you make your money, you're out. But they also add in a big amount up front. Let's say that the sale price is $50 million, but now the deal is worth $75 million. Why do you need the extra $25 million? Ah, that goes as commissions, and that goes as special expenses to the people who own the private equity firm. So now they've made their money. No matter what happens to the deal, they're made whole. So the average equity purchase company would last about 7 years. This was before the crash. Now it's under 4 years. Bain Capital is one of those companies, Mitt Romney's company. Well, then in the case of the one in my hometown, they closed down the plant. They took the pension funds, and now you had people who had no income, no other skills at that time, and they were bankrupt. And the company could do it. Let's say they could take a bicycle or a dishwasher company in the United States that has been there for 100 years. Once these guys buy it, say goodbye to American, because they're going to take this to China. And if China is too expensive, they'll take it to India. India is too expensive, they'll take it to Bangladesh. They'll take it to Haiti. Or they, during NAFTA, they took it to Mexico. But then Mexico was no good because China offered better deals, cheaper labor, and more skilled labor. So now they can get that same washing machine that used to cost $60, made in the United States. It sold for $200. Now they can get the same identical washing machine made in China for $15. So they closed down the plant, and just from 2000 to 2012, 55,000 factories closed in the United States. And a lot of those were because of equity partnerships, the equity buyout. So these people are a plague. I call them economic genocidalists. These are the lowest of the low. But they end up heading PBS Channel 13 in New York. They end up heading other groups because they're rich. They can write checks. They can write checks to museums, so they sit on their boards. They can then donate paintings, so they get their name in the social circles. These people are the most insecure people imaginable, because every day they wake up, they're purely predatory. They wake up like a great white shark that hasn't eaten in a week and wants to eat everything in sight. And they surround themselves with people that enable them. Now, these people should have been shamed a long time ago. Instead of being shamed, they are praised. They represent the people who consult with the President of the United States, with members of Congress. They are brought forward as experts, and they're frequently the people who do co-ventures and co-deals with people on Wall Street. So anytime you hear the word PE, it means private equity. And these people should be exposed. In any case, when you write a big check, it's amazing how you win friends. So here's the deal. Once the big part of the money they poured into the oil and gas companies is now no longer profitable. Other industries are mired in no growth or shrinking environment. Chaos keeps breaking out in the international markets, most recently over Greece and China, but Italy's a basket case. It's going to go broke. It is broke. It can never pay back the $2 trillion in its debt. And watch Italy be the one country, the big country, that's more likely than any of the others to leave the Eurozone. So healthcare, which accounts for nearly one-fifth of the U.S. gross domestic product, is the really good growth industry. So the people want to make the money. They want to get on the disease bandwagon, because that's the one thing that we'll put money into, either directly from the consumer or through Medicaid, Medicare, or through insurance. And here's what Tom Banning, CEO of the Texas Academy of Family Physicians, told the Texas Tribune, quote, "The forces are aligned to force consolidation, and frankly, how those independent doctors are able to compete against the well-heeled, deep-pocketed systems or networks is going to be a problem. To me, the question becomes, if a for-profit, publicly traded or privately held venture capital fund owns these doctors, what's their fiduciary duty to the patients? Well said. Well said. And that's honest. Think of the possibilities. The Texas Tribune said, quote, sensing a new vein of potential profits to be mined in the multi-billion-dollar healthcare industry, a small but growing number of private equity firms is seeking to buy into primary care practices. Interviews with doctors and financial analysts suggest mergers and acquisitions are at an all-time record in the United States. In the second quarter alone, U.S. targeted deals reached $635 billion. It's almost three-quarters of a trillion in just the first quarter of this year, the highest quarterly ever totaled. These deals are driven by corporate buyers, armed with cheap debt and their overpriced shares. They're outbidding PE firms and pushing them aside. And consolidation in the healthcare sector is running rampant. And so, quote, they're finding that they have to be bigger, stronger, integrated organizations in order to be viable in the marketplace. So what's this mean? Okay, what if you're an anesthesiologist? What if you're a primary care physician and you're with a group of doctors? And now someone comes along and says, okay, we're going to pay you. We're going to pay you $1 million a year. Now you're making $400,000. Okay. Wow, $1 million? Yeah. And for the next 20 years, or however long the contract is, you work for us. Okay. And what's that mean? It means that now you're going to do a lot more surgeries, take a lot more tests, you're going to perform a lot more procedures, and you're going to charge a lot more for each one. I see. So you're giving me $1 million, but I'm going to make you $3 million. What about the patient? What if they're overtested, overtreated? Who cares? We don't care. In America, we kill more people each year by medicine than heart disease or stroke or cancer or diabetes. Do you think the doctors, the hospitals, do you think the President of the United States, do you think anyone in government gives about patients? That's a joke. You'd have to be extraordinarily naive to believe that anyone cares. They care about power and profit and exploiting the system. When you have a hospital that charges you $30,000 for a pill, the same identical pill in Egypt costs $10, do you really think they care as long as someone will pay for it? Do you think they care when a bag of saline costs a dollar and they charge $100? No. And no one's stopping them. Everyone's piling on, and they bought the legislators to make sure they get their way. Quote, a report by Bain and Company, there's Mitt Romney, found that last year healthcare buyouts by the private equity firms, not corporate M&As, in North America soared nearly 60% year over year to a record $15.6 billion across 80 mostly smaller deals, with only one deal above $1 billion. The new thing is that the private equity firms are targeting primary care groups. It's a land grab right now, said Todd Spanstrea, partner of Crowell Horwath, an accounting and consulting firm. Part of the reason why they're chasing after primary care physicians is because specialty practices have become targets of publicly traded corporate entities that have been driving up prices beyond the private equity firms are willing to pay. Hospital systems, too, are buying primary care groups to get ready for the next big thing, which is a shift in Medicare and other public programs. Medicare is transitioning from a fee-for-service payment system which pays doctors for services they provide to a value-based model that pays doctors providing cost-effective treatments. The idea is to keep getting their enrolled populations healthier rather than just treat them for specific illnesses. So now there's a mad competition for your disease. Remember, when you're sick, they profit. So when they can buy medical centers, they can buy hospitals, and it doesn't matter whether it's a profitable or a non-profit hospital, it's irrelevant. You're still going to be charged up the gazoot. then it's time that we understood how we'd made one huge mistake. And the price is going to keep going up and up. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break. Come back. We have a lot more to share. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Before we go to our first audio clip, and we're going to share an audio clip that I think you'll find of interest, and then I'm going to open up our talkback line. I'll give you that talkback number in a moment so you can respond. Let's hear from America's leading Christian, so she claims, about Goodwill Industries. I'm sure many of us have given. I know I haven't, to Goodwill Industries. And the thought was you're giving to a nonprofit that would dispense these to the public. Let's see her take on this.
That because I did not toe the line on U.S. policy for Israel.
What line is that that they wanted? Were you told directly that you had to toe a line, or explain that to me?
Well, every candidate for Congress at that time had a pledge. They were given a pledge to sign. And I was new on the scene. And so the pledge was...
As America's best Christian, I'm fed up. Tired of for-profit industries pretending to be non-profit charities, finagling tax codes, finessing public opinion. These charities cram their coffers with tax-free cash by pretending to help people. Shady. And an idea shamelessly stolen from religion. The most egregious, Goodwill Industries, truly the Catholic Church of hand-me-downs. Most people who pop their tops into Goodwill bins think it's a nonprofit charity. It's not. It's a business far more about industry than the Goodwill, to the tune of $5 billion a year. And just like most churches or any get-rich-quick scheme, the cash always trickles up to the top. One branch paid its executives over $3.7 million in 1 year. That's a lot of charity to themselves. And while Goodwill execs may not have Creflo Dollar's Gulfstream jet, that doesn't stop them from enjoying international first-class travel to five-star hotels. For outreach. Again, a Christian ministry term of art that means roughly, which Four Seasons do you want me to stay at this time, Jesus? And how could Goodwill not have a collection plate full of cash? Look at their business model. Sell something that costs nothing. Another religious innovation. We sell salvations, they sell donations. And how do they get them for free? by tricking you into thinking they will be used to help others. Again, another gimmick stolen from us. And if that's not enough windfall, they slurped up $100 million in government grants last year, money that could have gone to saving starving children by teaching them about Jesus seconds before they die. But you know what really keeps Goodwill flush with cash? Unlike stores that sell new clothing, Goodwill doesn't need to sneak off to Bangladesh to avoid the minimum wage. It does it right here, in America. Thanks to a Depression-era loophole in the Fair Labor Standards Act, Goodwill is exempt from paying the minimum wage for its disabled employees. How exempt, you ask? What nuns get exempt? Some employees get as little as 22 cents an hour. People say things aren't made in America anymore. Not so. Blind people are made in America to work for loose change. Normally, I don't like to discuss figures, except to say that I'm a perfect size two. But how long would it take someone making 22 cents an hour to earn what the California CEO made in 1 year? Let's see. 1,188,733 divided by 22 cents. That's 5,403,332 hours. That's 135,083 weeks. That's 2,598 years. Jesus hasn't even lived that long. But he'd recognize those wages. And he'd also recognize secular charlatans using his flock's playbook to get rich. Make tax-free millions by pretending you're doing good. Well, that's religion's corporate motto. And quite frankly, we're tired of the competition.
Now let us hear from Cynthia McKinney, an outspoken member of Congress that went against the Jewish lobby, and she no longer is in Congress. Here's something that she has to say that I'll bet no other legislator has shared with you.
Not allowed to do that because I did not toe the line on U.S. policy for Israel.
What line is that that they wanted? Were you told directly that you had to toe a line, or explain that to me?
Well, every candidate for Congress at that time had a pledge. They were given a pledge to sign. And I was new on the scene. And so the pledge had Jerusalem as the capital city, the military superiority of Israel.
American Congress people have to sign this pledge.
Yes. You sign the pledge. If you don't sign the pledge, you don't get money. So, for example, it was almost like water torture for me. My parents observed this. I would get a call, and the person on the other end of the phone would say, I want to do a fundraiser for you. And then we would get into the planning. I would get really excited because, of course, you have to have money in order to run a campaign. And then 2 weeks, 3 weeks into the planning, they would say, did you sign the pledge? And then I would say, no, I didn't sign the pledge. And then my fundraiser would go kaput.
So, well, I just want to get into this pledge a little bit more. So this is basically something that is mandatory, that every congressperson has to sign, saying that, what, Jerusalem, you said, is the capital of Israel, and what else?
You make a commitment that you will vote to support the military superiority of Israel, that the economic assistance that Israel wants, that you would vote to provide that.
This isn't a question for the Congress people serving, that they are representing, or they're supposed to be representing, the people of the United States, not a foreign country, and yet they have to pledge allegiance,
yes,
to a foreign state.
That's what
no
I
one
was,
questions this.
That's what I was asked to do. And I made it public. This probably nobody had said anything about it, but I made it public, and then, you know, the excuse was, well, you know, those were just overzealous advocates for Israel. So then the tactic changed. And but this is what is done for 535 members of the United States Congress, 100 senators, 435 members of the House of Representatives have to now write a paragraph, which basically says the same thing. So it's not a pledge, but it's a paragraph, and you post it, and, you know, there are these forums you have to go to at the synagogues or whatever. And then, you know, if you don't perform appropriately, then you don't get money to run your campaign. The problem is that it requires an awful lot of money to run a campaign. And whether it's a woman's organization, an environmental organization, people can read about this on the internet if they're interested. If you go to thomas.loc.gov, that is the official United States Congress website. And if you put in the name Gus Savage, because Gus Savage was a black member of Congress who was targeted by the pro-Israel lobby, and he had the foresight to use his position as an incumbent in the House of Representatives to put his experience on the congressional record for the entire existence of the United States Congress now, people will be able to access his experience. And what he wrote was that it was the Garden Club of New Jersey that gave his opponent $5,000. But it wasn't really the Garden Club of New Jersey. It was the activists who were associated with AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee.
Wow, unbelievable. But we're almost out of time, so I just want to get into a little bit of your personal experience.
Okay, there is Cynthia McKinney. So what are your thoughts that an extension of the Jewish community in Israel, mainly Zionist, have such control over our Congress that Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, every single member of the Senate voted to support Israel in not the Palestinian effort or anything involving the Palestinian issue. They're terrified of them. Your thoughts on this? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while you're calling in, I'll add a few more things here. This is from Echo Watch. Yesterday, Oklahoma recorded 5 earthquakes centered near Crescent, Oklahoma, some of which were felt in at least 5 states, Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, Missouri, and Arkansas. 3 of the quakes measured 4.0 magnitude, and the biggest was 4.5 magnitude, the strongest earthquake in the region since a magnitude 4.9 near Conway Springs a year ago. So it's not about the damage at this point. It's about their increasing magnitude. There have been multiple quakes, but they've had 40 earthquakes hit there in the last 7 days. So reasonably, you can expect to have a big earthquake in the very near future in Oklahoma, unless you shut down the gas hydrofracking and the derricks that are pumping all that fracking water back into the ground, and that's causing this. Also, this is from Yahoo News. It says, quote, trains will be disrupted, power will go out, satellite signals will go wonky. That's what we have to look forward to when the sun next has a meltdown, and we're likely to get no more than 12 hours warning. In a new government document, the Department of Business, Innovation, and Skills has laid out its space weather preparedness strategy, outlining the risks of unsettled space weather, as well as what it plans to do about them. The document explains that the worst-case scenario is a coronal mass ejection, huge eruptions on the sun, which cause parts of its corona to detach. The corona is the pearly glow around the sun that you can only see during a total solar eclipse, made up of plasma and rarefied gases. The worst-case scenario is based on the Carrington effect of 1859, which caused solar flare-related X-rays and radiation storms. In 2015, a similar event could cause the national grid to fail, satellite operations to shut down, increased radiation on flights, and upset the electronic system. The report suggests that there are 3 things that country needs to do to prepare for such an event. Improve alerts and warnings. We haven't done anything. Upgrade power and communications infrastructure with fail-safe backups. We've done nothing. And have a plan in place to deal with effects should they come to pass. Zip. Nothing. Except for this audience. Isn't it interesting? Over the last 2 years, I've been suggesting that you at least be prepared in case there is a solar flare. And we had two giant solar flares in the last 12 months. We were just not in the orbit. But had we been in the orbit, everything they just said would happen. 12 hours until your lights go out everywhere. And so for those of you who have made your preparations and have attended the meetings, listened to workshops, good for you. Now the government, in this document, saying the same thing we said, but no one in the media is paying attention. And real quick, let's say hello to Rob from New Jersey. Your turn, Rob. Not there? Okay.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Well, it seems to me, if I understand what you said correctly, they wouldn't have that kind of an impact if it wasn't for the greed and the irresponsibility of these companies that accept the buyout.
You are correct. You are correct, unless they get control of a board. And then once you're controlling the board of directors, you control the company for all intents and purposes. But more often than not, these are not hostile takeovers. There have been hostile takeovers, and sometimes people did what was called the poison pill, where they buy up all their own stock and they create so much debt that the company no longer would be profitable. But they make their money in the deal up front, and then however long it takes that company to stay afloat or sink, they could care less. Because now they own their technology, they own their patents, they own their trademarks. They can take that anywhere. You can make a Ford, you can make a Chrysler, you can make a GE anywhere in the world that you can have a cooperative deal. You bought the brand name, and that's what you market. The car itself, the physical apparatus you make it wherever it's cheap, according to these people. And that's why we've lost 30 million jobs. That's why we have so many people suffering. And these are the people who caused it, and the politicians supporting it, the media that refuses to call them out for what they are.
Well, how did the PEs take over a board of directors?
They buy into it. More often than not, they buy huge blocks of stock. When you buy enough stock, a block of 5%, let's say, you're going to get on that board of directors. When you're on the board, you can then put more money in. If the company is floundering anyway, you can put money in and then definitely get yourself in control. And once you're in control, which is relatively inexpensive to the total deal, then you're looking at how much it's going to cost you to squeeze every drop of orange out of that juice out of that orange, and then you cast it aside. The consequences to the employees, the community, to the infrastructure of a town is irrelevant to these people, because they live up on Park Avenue and other places, and they live in a rarefied air where everyone's there to support them, including the media. We're out of time.
Go public and remain private?
Pardon me? I'm sorry, I didn't hear your last comment. We will do more on that. We'll do a whole program on it. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.